Let's Talk Development, Season 2, Episode 5.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast series, Let's Talk Development by the Consortium for Development Policy Research. My name is Rizwan Faiz. I'm a lawyer and I'm a partner in the law firm Faiz, Sharif and Shinwari. We focus a lot on the power sector, particularly the power generation sector. And our guest today is Mr. Waqas Musa. Mr. Waqas Musa is the CEO of Hedron Solar, which is a solar power company which has been working in Pakistan since 2014. And Mr. Waqas is also a member of the executive committee of the Pakistan Solar Association. He was the vice president of the association a couple of years back, and he has over 20 years of experience of working in the solar power sector and the renewable sector in Pakistan. Welcome, Waqas Saab. Thank you so much for joining us today. Waqas Saab, today's topic is going to be focusing on Pakistan's transition to renewable energy. And what I want to be talking about today in this podcast is the current state and trends of renewable power in Pakistan. What are the challenges present and foreseeable of the renewable sector in Pakistan? What's the industry perspective of the solar industry on how the renewable sector development is moving ahead? And how on the commercial side you see the competition, investment, R&D, and things like these moving ahead in the sector. So if you don't mind, I'll start with my first question, which is, let's dive into it. I mean, how much has the role of solar power increased in the past few years in Pakistan?
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast and looking forward to sharing my views here. The topic is very interesting. Of course, it's very interesting for me as well. But yeah. I think these days in the news, in the general, and with the summer coming in, the mercury hitting 47 degrees today.
It is 47 today, right?
So it's definitely time when you want to talk more about solar and how you can benefit from the sun. So to come to your question directly, which is what's the impact of solar or what's the impact in the overall power mix? Yeah. We have a vision, or you can say I have a vision, or it's something which is a vision in the sense where things are going to go in the future. Every rooftop is going to have solar on it. So basically, if you look at air conditioning today, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, air conditioning was something people did not think about. Or did not know about so commonly. Today, it's everywhere. Mobile phones, something which 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, the amount of time we spent on screens was not known. I think 10 years down the road, when you look at a house or a rooftop, which is whether it's a commercial building or it's a school or it's a factory, which does not have solar panels on it, you're like, what exactly are they thinking? Iska matlab inka koi masla chal raha hai. They don't have money, or there is like some kind of issue jiski wajah se wahan pe solar nahi laga hua. Otherwise, it's going to be a part of pretty much the landscape, and it's something which is a given when you build a house. It's something, and we're already seeing this, by the way, today on the residential sector. When you go to many areas where when a new house is coming up, the contractor builds the house, and before it's sold, you see just ACs or air conditioning units lage hote hain ab ghar bikne se pehle, isi tarah solar systems are already installed, and good quality solar systems. Yeah. Similarly, when you see a feasibility study of a new factory, the owner is already considering that, okay, if I can get this much solar installed, what would be the percentage covered out of the consumption load which I have. So the future is going to be solar. And in a way, we're lucky in Pakistan. Yes, 47 degrees we get to enjoy once in a while. But more importantly, we get to see the sun 360 days out of 365, yeah. Perhaps maybe 350 out of 365. So it's a God-given opportunity for us to take advantage of what nature has given us and try to generate the maximum from this.
I mean, I saw something very interesting in one of my client's projects a few days ago. It's a medium-sized industrial project, and it's a greenfield project. And when they're buying the land for the project, they're actually buying extra land for solar at this stage.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is something which 10 years ago, no one would have thought
about.
But now with the way the pricing of conventional power is going, I think every industrial consumer, especially with commercial, obviously there's a restriction, or you could say that they have a limitation space wise. But even though I see, for example, hotels, I mean, I think all the big hotels in the big cities, almost all of them have a sizable solar generation capacity on their rooftops. With shops, etc., obviously with the size, it's not that feasible for them, but still many of them do it. But with the industrial consumers, this is an amazing development that they're buying land at the beginning to install their own solar generation.
We're seeing this, and you know, so this is something where the ROI for solar projects has, I mean, gone in my 10 years with the solar industry. So, I mean, I've been in the solar industry for about 10 years now. Before that, I was on a more conventional marketing and sales side. So in the last 10 years, I've seen the price go down by half, almost twice. So, you know, where we started, it was like about $1. Then it came to around 50 cents. And today it's around 25 cents for the whole system to be installed on a 25 cents, $0.25. So you're seeing these numbers, which start to make sense from an economic point of view. Solar prices are going down, electricity prices are going up. So the ROIs or the paybacks are becoming, you know, amazing. Less than two years, 1.5 year. So at that time, it starts to become more and more feasible for people to invest in that. Yeah. So you're seeing this on the industrial side. People are buying land and making a calculation of how much free space will I have for solar. And if I need to buy the adjacent piece of land, I can install solar there for 10 years, then maybe later on build a factory there. We're seeing people being very creative with the way they're using their existing space. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of these elevated structures which take advantage and, you know, sort of they go over all the obstacles. So that kind of allows you to increase capacity. We've had a recent design request from a university in Punjab where they want to install solar straight on the vertical walls. It's an already built university, and they want to, they're seriously looking at the feasibility that, yes, if the production numbers go down, but what kind of return am I going to get out of it? And they're seriously interested in this. And it's a project which I think maybe in another 2-3 months, we'll be kicking it off.
Is there an insulation benefit to these as well?
And of course, that's something which we haven't even started thinking about, the insulation benefit. Each time you install solar, it should at least, you know, help to bring the average temperature down by a degree or so during the year, perhaps more. There needs to be some more scientific discovery on this, but definitely there is a benefit. And of course, there's the benefit of green. I mean, you know, that's something I always used to tell my guys, the sales team, that, you know, in Pakistan, we can't afford the luxury of green. So in Pakistan, we have to sell solar on payback. We have to sell it on financial incentives. You know, when a farmer installs solar with us, he will only install solar if he saves money on his diesel cost, on his electricity cost. And we have reached that level in Pakistan where it now makes a lot of sense for almost everybody to be installing solar, because, you know, as soon as you have paybacks under 2 years, it starts to make sense.
I'm happy that you mentioned farmers, because we were just talking about the residential, the commercial, the industrial. How about the agricultural sector, which, let's say, in India counts for a large chunk of solar power utilization? How's the trend in Pakistan with respect to that?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, these days, I remember like about 2013-14 when we were doing our feasibility studies and when we used to go to the farm, you know, when you install a tube well, as they call them here, or the agriculture pumping system, it used to be like this, you know, everybody was gathering together to see. Even we were nervous, you know, if something goes wrong, people are going to start saying, oh my God, it's like, you know, I told you so, it never works. And it was like it's a magic show about to happen. You know, there's going to be water coming out of without using any kind of electricity or a tractor or any kind of diesel engine. And people would be like, you know, does this water contain, like, will this water have current? Because it's coming from solar. So from those days, today, if you go into any farmland, even a small one, so you know, right now I have seen, like, for example, again in southern Punjab, DG Khan, and I think we've also seen this a little bit in Sindh, people have trolleys and they install solar panels on those trolleys so that they can
transport them.
So you
different
can
sites.
Yes, so they can power one motor on Monday and Tuesday, and then take it to the next guy, and on Wednesday and Thursday there's another farm, neighboring farm, which they will power using the same thing, and they're selling it on a it's rented, you know, so the solar panel trolley is available for rent, or the same farmer might have three different fields and they will be transporting it around. And this is something which you know, when we look at international art magazines like PV Magazine, they sort of bring it out as it's like a huge innovation, and you know, a company has developed this. And you've got if you go to Pakistan, it's like in the village there's an industry of
it's happening
lohar.
Organically.
Yes, it's happening organically. I mean, we initially used to say no. That, you know, you shouldn't do this because the panels might break. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, concreted, carpeted roads over there. It's going to be, you know, knocking on the bumps. But people would do it anyway.
Yeah.
And if a panel breaks, they just use it or they replace it with another panel because individually the panels are cheaper than the petrol or the diesel, which they're saving. So it's something which has grown organically. You YouTube it today.
Top,
and
it's,
like,
it's very interesting because the engines which were traditionally used are normally the dirtiest engines,
yes,
in the
yes.
sense they're the least efficient
yes,
engines,
yeah.
which produced a great deal of emissions. So from a green perspective,
it's
this
wonder.
Transition is...
I mean, I remember so many stories of, you know, having... We go out into the fields, you know, you're driving down a serene, calm... And if you step out into the rural part of Punjab or pretty much any part of Pakistan, the green fields and the kind of, you know, the weather is nice and everything is quiet, and suddenly you hear this tick, 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 tick,
yeah,
tick, tick,
yeah.
kind of generator thing, and you can see and
plume of smoke rising.
Plume of smoke. And obviously they don't care about any yeah. of the, you know, like using catalytic converters or anything like this. So it's and I don't think there's any way we could have convinced them not to do it because of environmental reasons. The thing which has convinced them is the fact that the price of electricity is going up. In a way, I'm actually happy that the government has recently taken some measures to remove subsidies from some of the... Obviously, each subsidy has its own pros and cons and needs to be looked at as an overall context. But just purely from an environmental perspective, removing the subsidy on electric provision for tube wells is something which is a good decision.
Yeah.
Because it allows farmers to convert more towards more efficient ways of agriculture. And in fact, specifically if you look at agriculture and the rural structure, if you have an X amount of money, which, you know, in Pakistan, we always have less than an X amount of money, and you want to deploy it in the electricity sector, if you want to deploy it in the development of a new, let's say, grid station, if you develop it in a urban environment, the number of consumers which you're serving is going to be much more versus if you deploy the same technology or the same amount of money to deploy a grid station and a transformer in a rural environment.
Yeah.
Even if you can reach the village, the lands where they need these agriculture pumps are another few kilometers beyond that. So it always seemed to make sense, or it should have made sense. And now I guess, I mean, it's already doing it anyway. But the point is that the electric supply companies should have been encouraged from the very beginning to encourage or to incentivize the, I mean, I don't want to use the word incentivize, but basically to let the farmers invest in on solar and renewable technologies, which are independent of the grid itself. So in a way, it just happened naturally, but we could have nudged it a little bit more and made it faster.
We will come to this point later on how the traditional energy market is going to be impacted by this,
of course, yeah.
by this huge
yeah.
trend and development,
yes, yes, yes.
and how perhaps there is a lot of resistance coming from the traditional power market to this development.
Mm.
But talking about the trends, there's another thing which just popped into my mind, which is, you know, the growing trend towards EVs. Because I'm hopeful that very soon we will see, especially two-wheelers and three-wheelers, in large part being transformed to EVs, as has happened, let's say, in China, as is happening in India. Because in Pakistan, obviously, the biggest consumer of petrol is motorcycles and three-wheelers.
Mm.
And we really, from an environmental perspective, need to transfer them to electric power. So, I mean, how does solar tie in with the rise or the expected rise in the trend for EVs?
It's a very interesting one. It's a natural ally. It's a natural ally. For example, I mean, if we started doing EV charger installations about 5 years ago. And, you know, it was just such a natural fit for us. It's almost the same kind of technology in terms of, you know, the electrical work required, the technicians required, the engineers required. And it goes hand in hand. It's one of the things people get wrong about EVs is this thinking that you need to have fast charging gas stations. No, you don't.
Mm.
The majority of charging is going to happen at your home. It's exactly like,
yeah.
you know, this friend
yeah.
of ours yeah. gets charged. You charge it at night when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
So pretty much most of the charging is also going to happen when we are at home. I mean, it gets a little bit more difficult to apply this when you go to two-wheelers and three-wheelers, but even then, it's pretty much the same way it's going to get charged. And to some extent, so this is type 1 charging, and then there's to some extent, which is called destination charging. So home charging, destination charging, and then the last one is the gas station charging or the commercial charging, which is going to be there for like long drives, such as the motorway, or when you really, really run out of fuel and you need to fast charge something. It's like the way your mobile is. You know, sometimes you get
basically either for long distances or commercial vehicles.
Or commercial vehicles, but even with commercial vehicles, frequently the route is very well known. And then on commercial vehicles, like especially on the two-wheelers, we're seeing a lot of swappable battery options coming up. So that's something which is coming up. So if there's a fleet, let's say DHL, I think there's like a bunch of companies in Pakistan as well who've set up in this two-wheeler and three-wheeler where they can swap their battery pack. It's not clear how it's going to go yet, but it's the picture is getting clearer as we go. It's still a bit vague, but we are going to go there. So when we look at that and keeping in coming back to the context of solar, as we start seeing that, we're going to see more and more consumption from each household. So for example, today, if there is a household which has a combined spending of electricity, which is their electricity bills. And in fact, we should also include gas in this because that's also an energy source. So electricity, which is the amount you pay to LESCO or FESCO or K Electric or whoever happens to be your DISCO. And then the amount you pay to the gas company, which is SNGPL or SSGC, whoever is the relevant gas company. And the amount you pay to PSO or Shell or whoever is the petrol place where you fill your petrol from. So if you combine these three together, this is your overall energy bill. A lot of that is going to convert to electric. So you're going to have, obviously, the electricity being converted to electric. And then you have the gas being converted to electric. We already see this in the trend of the inverter ACs. And then people start switching towards electric heating for their cooking requirement, for their water requirements, the space heating requirements, and then also their cooking requirements eventually.
I was going to come to that. Do you see any possibility of a transition to electricity being used for cooking requirements?
Yes.
Because gas at the moment is king when it comes to that.
It is king, but you know, I think in Pakistan for a lot of things, I'm retracking a little bit, but for a lot of things, when we used to study about the demand and supply and the invisible hand in economics, Adam Smith, I think it was, right? So this invisible hand is really something which is, I think in Pakistan, we have kind of ignored it to some extent. So, you know, by keeping gas very cheap, there have been circumstances where, you know, in our office, the cook in the kitchen, they light up a stove in the winter.
And they just leave it on.
They just leave it on because, you know, it keeps the room warm. And we're like, really? Or, you know, there has been a case where I saw somebody I heard about this, that they take a matchstick and turn on the stove and then leave it on because they're out of matchsticks. Yeah, so, you know, it was so cheap that they really didn't care about it.
I mean, so for me, working in the energy sector, I think gas on tap was one of the biggest mistakes.
Yes.
We have neighboring countries like Iran, which have something like 20 times the gas reserves as Pakistan. And save for a few cities, there's no gas on tap.
And it's not just not gas on tap, the price should be right. I mean, if you want to give gas on tap, you should charge for it. I mean, it's at the end of the day, a supply and demand kind of thing, right? So as soon as they increased the prices of gas, a lot of people started shifting from the traditional gas geysers to Insta geysers, which are on demand. So the gas consumption goes down. And this is something which, you know, it happened overnight. I have seen people who, once they got their bill of, you know, from 2,000 rupees a month to 20,000 rupees a month, they immediately shifted to the Insta gas heaters, the geysers for their washrooms the next week or the week after that.
So, and solar compatible ones.
And then they started asking us, you know, what about solar geysers? So that's, I mean, so coming back to the previous question that you asked, there is going to be more and more electric
consumption
as we grow. And then now we've talked about electricity, then we talked about gas, and then you talk about petrol. So as the number of EVs start coming in, and as you start seeing more and more homes having this night charging kind of thing, even apartment buildings, you know, any new apartment building that comes up now has 2 to 3 floors of parking.
Yeah.
These parkings will all have electric chargers, and there is going to be a mobile app which you just press and, you know, your charging starts or whatever. But it's going to be a thing. I mean, in 10 years, I would be surprised if there is any building new that comes up which does not have at least half the parkings equipped with a electric charging outlet where you can sort of, you know, do your Easy Paisa, Telenor, whatever.
I mean, so if we have for the past many years or perhaps many decades, we've been sort of ingrained to think that we have to reduce our power consumption. But really, for everything, whether it's for growth, industrial, commercial, we have to increase it. It's just the right type of power that we have to use.
Yes, and we need to increase the efficiency.
We need to increase the efficiency.
You know, one of the development criteria, or one of the benchmarks which are used to judge the development level of a particular country, is the per capita power consumption.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I don't have the numbers right now. We're very low.
Yeah, we're, I think, in the 120s or 130s
or something. Probably
like
the last third, where we are pretty much for, you know.
We're in the bottom third, for sure.
Bottom third, where we stay for pretty much everything, except cricket, where we're probably in the top 10. Hopefully. Let's see how it goes this time. But yeah, I think so. This is something which needs to improve. And as this improves, a lot of it can be powered through solar. So that's where, you know, it's been a long kind of answer. But eventually, with all of these things coming in, the per capita consumption of electricity will increase. And once that per capita electricity of consumption consumption of electricity increases, there is a bigger and bigger opportunity for solar to be a part of that mix. And we're going to see a lot of that happening.
If I'm from where I started, so the trend, we'll talk about the challenges in a minute, but you see it basically increasing and somewhat inevitable, right? Okay, so this brings me to my next sort of issue that I had in my mind, because let's say 10 years ago, we used to hear a lot about solar power generation companies. Mm. We don't hear about them so much. Mm. So why has that gone on a downward trend, firstly? And secondly, I mean, what's the mix these days? That do solar generation companies produce more solar power, or is it the reverse metering consumers, whether industrial, commercial, et cetera, who produce more?
The very, very interesting questions. You know, I've been, for the last couple of days, we've been writing an article for PSA, for a European solar, I mean, it's a global publication, and similar questions which they've asked. And, you know, I was poring over the numbers. And it's amazing that in Pakistan, first of all, let's just look at, as a percentage, or as a number, not as a percentage, sorry, as a number. Right now, we have about 1.5 gigawatts. This was the last, a year ago. I think we have 1.5 gigawatts of power scale, utility scale power, which is installed, which is the IPPs or the companies which are solar generation companies and which are supplying to the grid. So you have the big projects, Qaid-e Azam Solar Park, and then there's, you know, that's got about 400 megawatts, and then another 200 to 300. Qaid-e Azam 2, and then there's some more projects which are developed around the world. So you can get this from, you know, the NEPRA website and see the number of solar licenses issued. The total import of solar in Pakistan last year was about 5.5 gigawatts.
Okay.
And experts are predicting, I mean, not us, I mean, people from the industry are predicting that this year, which is 2024, we are expecting to see imports of about 12 gigawatts. So to answer your question, it's about 4 to 5 times more solar deployment.
Than
the solar power generation companies. And most of this deployment, actually, a lot of it is not even going to net metering. Within that, I think, if I'm not mistaken, about 2 gigawatts is the total net metered capacity, 1,500, and then, you know, whatever has been added in the 1,500 at the end of December, and whatever has been added in the last 3-4 months of this year. That's the net metered capacity, but there is a lot of consumption which is non. So all the tube wells, for example, all the agriculture-based deployments are non net metering, and nowadays, you know, you go into any rural area, and you know, you go to the tire shop, and when he opens the shop in the morning, he takes out two solar panels, which he uses to
run his compressor.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, to have a fan and a light kind of thing. So this is something which we're seeing a lot more of. And this is showing up in import numbers as well. A lot of the imports are happening. And then when you check where this material was sold in the market, you can see that, for example, markets like Sakhar, South Punjab, where it's not going mainly to the grid. A lot of it is going to rural off-grid deployments. And it's huge projects over there as well. A lot of homes, a lot of agriculture installations. You can see mobile towers. You have projects by NGOs on basic health units, on schools. So we've been working with a number of organizations which run charity schools or which run schools that for you know, less privileged background students. And they're all undergoing rapid solarization. You know, if they have 200 schools, maybe 100 of them already been solarized. Similarly, you have basic health units. You have a lot of work on the drinking water. So small pumps, 1.5 HP, 0.75 horsepower, that kind of motors, they're getting solarized quite aggressively.
I find it very interesting that you mentioned Sakhar. Now, I work with all the discos, and SEPCO, for example, which is a Sakhar Electric Power, it has never drawn its allocation of power from the national grid fully, for the reason that SEPCO knows that whatever it draws, more than 50% of that will be aggregate technical and commercial losses, of which technical losses will be about 7-8%, but around 45% will be commercial losses. Mm. Which basically means unmetered connections.
Yes.
So power theft is the biggest contributory factor to the circular debt, which has exceeded 3 trillion rupees now. Mm. It's the biggest debt, domestic debt parked on the federal government. And solarization is a great way to curb that, because I think there are many circles in SEPCO or in Tresco, the tribal area, the Kesco circles, which know that they're going to have on average 12, 14 hours of load shedding. Mm. It's not because the generation is not there in the system. It's because these discos are not willing to draw that power, because they know that it's going to go to a waste. Mm. So for consumers in these areas, it's almost inevitable that they will shift to solar, because the distribution companies simply can no longer take that risk any further. Each one of these, this year alone, these loss-making discos, 5 of them or 6 of them, are going to cause 590 billion rupees of loss to the national exchequer. So perhaps a switch to renewable.
Yes, yes, I think this is
a way to curb the circular debt.
And it's not a voluntary switch. It's a switch which is going to happen anyway.
It's inevitable.
It's inevitable, exactly. You know, it's happening. And I think this is something which we need to keep in mind in our planning divisions, or in our, and I think, you know, before the podcast, we were discussing about the role of the power ministry and the power division in terms of this planning. I think their biggest role is recognizing this. So, you know, we had about 4 or 5 years ago, we published a paper with Lums Energy Institute where we talked about electric utility 2.1. Mm. What's the future of the grid going to look like? Mm. And I think it's time for us to sort of, you know, put on our creative hats and go into a brainstorming session in the power ministry, across the industry, across different sectors of the industry, and think about what the grid of 2035 is going to look like. And then once we can picture that, or, you know, sort of imagine that, then we say that what are the plans we need to make today to hit, or to be able to glide into that to 2035 instead of crashing into it, like we usually, you know, end up doing. We crash into changes, or we crash into policies. We need to sort of, you know, land ourselves there properly. So, you know, some of the things which come to mind are things like this is called distributed generation, where, you know, we have a name for it. We call these people prosumers, where they consume and produce at the same time. So they're called prosumers.
Prosumers.
This is a terminology in the industry which they use. There's another terminology which they use, which is the utility death spiral. So, you know, you have these fixed costs and you know, the way the utility business works, the majority of costs are fixed, but the majority of pricing or revenue is variable.
Absolutely.
So these two actually don't make sense. It used to make sense for 80, 90 years, from the 1920s to the late 90s or 2000s, or even the first decade of the 21st century. But now it doesn't make sense, because as you have these fixed costs, so if you have 100 consumers and then 5 of them or 10 of them decide to go solar because it makes sense for them, the fixed costs remain where they are. Now these fixed costs,
per capita goes up.
And these capacity charges, which you were being charged on 100 people, now they're going to be charged on 90. All this theft, which is being charged on 100 people, now it's going to be paid by 90. Suddenly their price is going to go up. And then maybe another 10 of them would say, okay, now it's also feasible for me to go solar. And so
you brought in the role of the government, that basically as the main policy making body, the government has to really think about the grid of the future. I mean, we're hearing a lot of things about changes to the tariff structure.
Yes.
For net metering.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the industry's view on what's happening and what should happen?
Okay, so in terms of, before we look at the industry view, and I've tried to explain this on previous interactions which we've had as well, is that, you know, we are the Pakistan Solar Association. So the first word is Pakistan. So we need to look at Pakistan as a whole, you know, and we're sitting here as part of a bigger umbrella, which is, you know, bigger than us. So when we look at Pakistan, we need to think of it from the point of view of the DISCOs. Yes, they're very inefficient and they don't control their theft and they've made a lot of mistakes in the past. But where we are right now, I can see the pain which they're going through. What is that pain? The utility debt spiral. If I continue in that, where is it coming from? So it's, you know, my house, is a one canal, 500 square yards house. In the last whole year, I've paid a bill of 30,000 rupees. Because, I mean, and there was like a 15,000 or 20,000 in 1 month and then another one, something like this. So if I look at from a LESCO's point of view, LESCO, the distribution company who services me, has lost one of their good customers who would have otherwise paid, you know, 80,000-90,000 rupees a month on average, no questions asked, just go online and, you know, pay the bill before deadline. So they've lost a customer. But more important than that, they still have to service this customer. So that's where the pain is coming in. You know, in the night, I use full power. I have my 5-6 air conditioners on and I need that. And then the day I sell and then I use. So what LESCO is saying is, number one, I lost my customer. But number two, I cannot plan for now not have, so I don't, it's not like LESCO has 1,000 houses and now they're going to serve 500. They still have these 1,000 houses which they need to service. So their infrastructure kind of remains in the same place. So now LESCO does have a point. That, you know, there should be a cost of serving these, or there should be a cost to these customers of utilizing the network of the DISCO. And I think if we want to find a solution, we will have to sit together with the power division, of course, and the regulators and the lawmakers and the industry, people like yourself as well, people like who are indirectly affected by the industry as well, and keep our emotions aside and try to come up with solutions.
Because you can see their point of view that
yes.
Starting from the early 90s until, let's say, until about 3-4 years ago, we were almost forced to go into this overdrive, say, for about a period of 6-7 years in the early 2000s when we didn't expand aggressively because the demand was far outstripping the power that we had. And the only way you could meet that in a satisfactory manner at that time was by installing large thermal plants. Mm. Extremely capital intensive. Capacity payments is the international model. The take or pay model is the international model. You had to do that. Mm. And obviously you're tied into those contracts in some cases till the late 2030s and with the latest plants till the late 2040s. Mm. They have to be serviced. Had they not been there in 2010, you know, we would have been in the darkness. Mm. So, I mean, and if you look at the government's point of view, to serve you, that customer who's gone out of that system during the daytime, I have to basically run the most expensive plant at nighttime to meet that. So when the government says that I can't buy at X rate, I can't buy at 19 rupees from you and then use the 60 rupee or 50 rupee unit to serve you at night, they do have a point.
Yes. I mean, so it's at the end of the day, the problems need to be solved by looking at all the perspectives and then also looking at the reality. There is an elephant in the room. This elephant in the room is called the battery. And this elephant in the room is coming quite fast.
It is.
So,
and the cost is going down.
I think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, we made some mistakes. Some of those mistakes, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. So today I can say that, oh, you should not have prescribed for those expensive, thermal, fossil fuel based power plants. Mm. Or you should have looked at this and you should have looked at that. I think it's something which it's easier to say. Maybe at that time there were certain pressures which forced people to look at that. But I think we can learn from it. What we can learn from those times is that if we can imagine the future in 10 years and then make some decisions based on that, we will probably be making better decisions.
Yeah.
So today, one of the decisions, and you know, in numerous podcasts or in numerous forums, sorry, not podcasts, in numerous forums, I have highlighted that keep in mind that in 5 years from today, battery technology is going to be better than where it is right now. So from a LESCO point of view, we need to keep in mind that yes, there is a demand yes, there is a justification in charging a certain amount to the customer who's producing solar in the day and not using and still using your grid. But at the same time, you can't charge too much. So the balance needs to be drawn out. What do I mean by that? If you offer, let's say, an off-peak tariff of about 60 rupees these days, inclusive of all the taxes, and the customer decides that, and then for the excess electricity, which is available in the daytime, the offer is, let's say, 25 rupees. Mm-hmm. Now, if the offer is 25 rupees and the regular price is 70, so the delta is about 45, right? Now, what's the option which the customer has? Today, in this world of prosumer, there's... And you know, the problem of solar is the fact that consumption happens throughout the day and production happens primarily in the day, in the daylight hours. So it's the matter of bringing that consumption or the production in line with the consumption. So you just need to sort of, you know, move some of the load there and bring it here. Right now, it's being done through net metering. But in the future, and you're seeing this in the West already, the battery is a big bridge on that. And batteries are getting better and batteries are getting bigger and batteries are getting cheaper. So today, if we do the maths, it costs around 25 rupees for a customer to take a unit in the morning and move it to night consumption. So if we look at a delta of 25 versus 70, that's a space of 45. And in a space of 45, if he needs to spend 25 rupees from his to sort of cycle this unit through the battery, he's still better off by 20 rupees.
Yeah.
So this will probably not fly very well, especially considering that battery prices are going down further and further. If we can make this price at around 50, now it starts to make sense, because at 50, what happens is that if the electric grid company is willing to buy back electricity from the consumer from your house at 50, whereas you could have utilized it through the battery and saved 70 rupees in the evening, but going through a battery costs you 25. So it's still better off for you to use Lesco as your battery. Yeah. And I think Lesco and all the distribution companies and then NTDC and the companies which basically own the infrastructure of the electricity, they need to start thinking of themselves like we're thinking of consumers as prosumers. They also need to start thinking of themselves as businesses. You know, what do I mean when I say business? It's, I'm in the business of buying and selling something. I'm in the business of buying and selling electricity. It does not matter if I bought my electricity from Mr. Rizwan or from Garo. At the end of the day, if I can sell the electricity which I brought from your house and sold it to the house next door and I can make a profit on that, that's the business I am in.
I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly, there needs to be a sit down and a talk.
Yes.
Because the present model clearly, the hit which is being taken is not sustainable. But at the same time, the direction that traditional thinking is no longer sustainable.
Absolutely.
And as you said, the battery is the elephant in the room.
Yes.
When that comes in, it's really going to knock that traditional business out of sync. Yeah.
And
what's NEPRA's sort of thinking?
What NEPRA and the power division and all the think tanks, which what we need to do, and this is something which I've been advocating for a while, is that we need to start thinking of the future with the battery. So solar is not going away. And the battery is not going to go away. Similarly, you know, the way the mobile phone came and it never really went away. So once these things start coming in, a battery on that side of the meter versus a battery on this side of the meter. So there's this very nice convention, you know, that side of the meter and this side of the meter.
Yeah.
So from a distribution company point of view, a battery on that side of the meter, which means the battery installed by the consumer, means you're knocked out of the game. But a battery on my side is interesting. So the problem which I'm facing is this duck curve. If you Google the duck curve, and again, it's something which we did not, it's not something which would just happen right now. You know, the duck curve was named the duck curve in 2015 by the California Institute of something. You can Google it 10 years ago. So it's a problem which somebody faced 10 years ago or maybe 12 years ago, and they took the time and they had the enough time to put a name for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're discovering this right now suddenly. And you know, it seems like, oh my God, there's a problem. Somebody has already had this problem. See what they did. And if they did a good job, maybe we can follow that. If they did not do a good job, we can learn from their mistakes and see what we can do. So we're seeing this in California. We're seeing this in Germany. We're seeing this in Alaska. We're seeing this in, you know, all these places. Sorry, not Alaska, Hawaii, where, you know, all of these places where solar penetration is quite high, Australia. So a battery on the grid side is probably going to be a part of the solution as well.
Yeah.
Is, are we ready for it now? Probably not, but are we getting there? Definitely. And then there's, you know, so many interesting studies and so many interesting things happening on grid level batteries. And there's so many other advantages of these grid level batteries, you know, like voltage stabilization, you know, this last minute energy requirement. You can decrease your, they call it the spinning reserve, where we have to keep gas peaker plants running.
Of course, the base load plants.
Baseload plants, and the baseload is the coal and the big ones, and then there's the ones which cater for sudden spikes. Yeah. Usually these are gas-based plants. These are more efficient, but they can quickly be ramped up. You know, it's interesting that for a layman sometimes to explain that, you know, the electricity grid, it's like a creature. It's on
it's
all
living
the time.
And breathing.
Yes,
it's living and breathing. It's changing all the time.
The demand is increasing. And electricity, once it's there, it needs to go somewhere. It's like, you know, when you have rain and you have water, it needs to go somewhere. It needs to find an outlet. So similarly, when electricity is being, it has been produced and it's been put on the grid, it needs to be used. So the matching of this production and demand was already difficult. And now solar and wind have kind of, you know, multiplied the complexity it's exponentially increased the complexity.
Ravana, how is this development being seen by your traditional energy sources, because obviously this impacts their business? Is there resistance?
It's
sabotage from their side? What do you think?
I'm an optimist, so I always like to look at the things from a positive perspective, and I feel that there is going to be resistance, because this is human nature. You know, we resist everything in the beginning. You know, it's like, and especially as you age and you become older and older, you know, it's more difficult to change habits. So we're seeing this, that, you know, these are traditional businesses which have been, and they're old businesses, you know, that they've been in operation for 30, 40, 50, 70 years. So to teach them new tricks, sometimes it takes an effort. But I think the ones which are agile and the ones which look at the future. So, you know, I always give the example to my students or to my team members or whoever is listening, that, you know, Kodak. How many people remember what Kodak is right now? I mean, I remember when I was growing up, Kodak was like an important part of it. You know, you had to finish the film, and sometimes you're done with 32 and you need to just take the
Kodak
last four
and
shots.
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster was another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, where are they right now? I was reading somewhere that Kodak still exists as a company.
They shut down the last one as well. they had the last processing facility. So, they shut that down a few years ago.
So, you know, where are they? So it's, if you don't change, you're going to go that direction. Some people say that, you know, Kodak developed the digital camera and they try to hide it and things like this. So that might be true, but it might not be true. But the important thing to learn from here is that we need to change. So similarly, these traditional companies, as long as they think about themselves as being in the business of providing power to people, then it does not necessarily have to be coal power.
Yeah.
It could always be solar power. And we're seeing this trend. So, you know, for example, Total is one of the biggest European players of the traditional fuel, and they have a renewable section. BP has a renewable section. Their logo has changed and it's now become a more modern kind of version. Mm. Hopefully they're doing this with the best of their heart and the best of their intentions. And you know, that's as a positive person, that's what I like to believe always, that, you know, we should look at things with a positive benefit of the doubt. So I'm hopeful that they will do it. If they don't, it's the job of the regulators and it's the job of the people who are paid to think about these things, you know, strategic 10-year, 15-year. And all of us, you know, we can contribute in this as well. The Pakistan Solar Association is always ready. I'm always ready, as you know, Hadron Solar. The idea is for people like us who know what the future is going to look like, or who have an idea of what the future is going to look like, to put our imagination and sort of, you know, take things forward and encourage these big players as well. It's difficult. There has been a lot of money invested. In some cases, there will be some people who will be very angry. And I think we need to understand, or we need to make a plan on how we will address these angry people.
But they have to realize the inevitability of it, basically.
Yes, I think that's the most
important.
Because,
I mean, the takeaway I'm getting is that in all these sectors, this development or transition is inevitable. And it makes commercial sense. It makes environmental sense. And really, these two factors mean that in the next 10 odd years, the outlook of this sector will be quite different from what it is now, and we need to start planning it for it now.
You know, it's definitely inevitable, and I mean, perhaps this we can end. I think they're signaling to us about the time as well, but
yeah.
It's democratization of the power sector.
Excellent, you know, with this, I love this word, democratization.
Because like we saw with social media, where, you know, the traditional TV has now sort of, you know, lost the importance of what it used to have. And, you know, there's this long tail kind of concept. Similarly, this concept of the prosumer, because everybody can now produce and consume, it has given people more choices, and it's moved these choices from a central unit down to the neighborhood level and to the individual level.
Yes.
So, you know, if you don't do it, they will do it. So, you know, if you don't start thinking about it, there's going to be six neighbors who are going to say that, you know what, we just sort of pass a line through our houses and all of us put a combined battery. And you're seeing this. So, for example, in Australia, there are community battery banks where the whole neighborhood is contributing to the battery bank, and they're kind of, everybody's taking a benefit from that. So we need to sort of take ownership of this trend. Otherwise, you're going to it's like you're going to go the way of Kodak. And again, it's not a bad thing. I'm not trying to say it. It's like, you know, PTCL. PTCL back in the day, like when I was young, getting a phone number was such an achievement. You know, you needed to call people. You need to make a sifarish or like, you know, call somebody to get the number on your, or if you're changing neighborhood and you want to keep the same phone number, that was an achievement as well, you know, getting the same number. Today, if you look at my business card, the only reason I have a landline number on that business card is so that you don't think of this as a Mickey Mouse company. Yeah. You know, if you call that landline number, probably nobody will answer. If they do answer and you say you want to talk to Akash, they're going to say, this is his mobile number. You know, give him a call because there's no landline extension which comes to my desk.
And I hope that the discos and the government, they realize this trend, this inevitability. And let's hope that all of us, the policymakers and the players in the sector, get together and, as you say, plan for the next 10 years. Inshallah. Kasab, it was brilliant talking to you. I think it's a lot of food for thought.
Thank you
so much. That's all the time we have for today's podcast. And thank you for listening.